thenewspress.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10, and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Deckers, makers of Uggs and Hokas, Pierre Lafond Wendy Foster offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines, Montecito Bank and Trust proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years, Habitat for Humanity, building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter, and CSU Channel Islands. No matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. We have a special guest today, Angel Martinez, who most of you know but don't really know because he was a high school track star. Is that true, Angel?
Yeah, I was, actually. That was a long time ago. That was about 60 pounds ago.
Well, you know, I think running is really important. I've been doing it for 50 years, and you know, you were chairman of the board and CEO of Deckers. You were a senior executive of many companies and changed the entire footwear industry. But as far as I'm concerned, the biggest achievement was some of those cross country runs that you did. So my hat's off to you.
Thank you. I don't know who that was. That seems like another lifetime ago, honestly.
Well, if you become a Facebook friend of Angel, you get to see some of the pictures that he posts, and he looks younger and skinnier.
Had a lot more hair.
And welcome to the show. Angel is also a board member of AHA, which is a very generous contribution that Angel has made because for those of you who don't know Angel, he's a great thinker and a good listener, which is very rare for board members. He has made a tremendous contribution to AHA over the years. You know, one of the things that AHA stresses is building character. And building character is such an important part of being a full human being. And the story of Angel, to me, is a story that is so clearly related to what kind of character he possesses today, which is of the highest order, and that is how he battled the difficulty of being an immigrant. And being an immigrant today is such a controversial issue, which makes no sense because it shouldn't be controversial at all. We all were children of immigrants, except for maybe three or four people who probably wouldn't let me go to their house anyway. But Angel, tell us a little bit about your story as growing up.
Yeah, I was. I came from Cuba in 1958, so I was 3 years old, and we came. This was about 5 months before Fidel rolled into Havana on January 1st, 1959. So, we got here in July of 1958. I was adopted by my grandmother's sister and her husband. That's who I came with, and it was supposed to be temporary. But you know, one thing led to another with the political environment, and it was 34 years before I saw my father and my mother and my sister again. And so in those days, you know, the Bronx in New York was, my neighborhood was a very, very tough area. I later found out it was where they filmed Fort Apache, the Bronx. As I was watching that movie, I said, you know, that's my neighborhood. It wasn't the South Bronx. We just called it the Bronx at the time.
How come if you are from the Bronx, and so am I, you don't sound like a New Yorker and I do?
Because I English is my second language, and okay. I've learned to be a chameleon language-wise.
Okay, so back to the Bronx.
Well, in the Bronx, you know, this I lived in a neighborhood, as you did too, which was a mix of every single kind of person you're going to encounter in life. I mean, I've always said this. All the people I would meet in life, I met in my neighborhood. And all the conditions that they were living in, I saw in my neighborhood. And that's been really at the core of my insight about people and a certain, I think, sense of empathy that I've, you know, kind of have developed over time, which I think is a fairly important thing if you're running an organization or something. And so you start to understand that your situation, A, you're not alone. There are other people in your situation. And B, your situation is not permanent. You know, either you can sort of be a victim to a situation, or you can try to take advantage of opportunities and improve your situation, which is what I was able to do. I was in America. You know, it's the dream of all immigrants to come to a country where opportunity is plentiful and you're not judged by anything but your capability to perform and to do things. And that was the ideal. That's what America promised when I was a kid growing up in the Bronx.
But you talk about having empathy as if it were a natural development for someone like you. But one of the things that I find really appalling is a lack of empathy in this country today. And there are people even with the exact same backgrounds of you who live in Southern Florida who want to keep the doors closed. And so what do you think differentiated your experience, or your was it your parents? Was it just luck? Was it your philosophy that made you develop empathy and care about people who were next to come?
Well, you know, by the time I came along, my guardians were in their 60s. And as a matter of fact, I remember my guardian telling me, his name was Albert O'Neill, by the way, Irish-Cuban. And by the time I came along, you know, they were elderly people. They'd already raised their kids. Their kids were my parents' age.
Don't say elderly. I'm over 60.
Oh, so am I.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, okay.
Okay.
Elderly back in the day.
Okay, right.
Whatever that means. So, you know, and they had actually, in raising four kids, had done everything you do, made all the mistakes, you know, had all of those missteps that we all sort of have in trying to raise kids. And so I was raised differently. Matter of fact, my step-siblings, who were all my parents' age, thought I was incredibly spoiled, you know, because I never got whacked, you know, and I was never aggressively, you know, disciplined. And yet, at the same time, I didn't really need to be. It was they were in a condition and a state where I kind of felt like I was taking care of them as much as they were taking care of me, particularly with health issues they had. So, I think that kind of gave me a different perspective. And plus, they were both born right at the turn of the last century, 1901 and 1903. And lived in, you know, I remember they were telling me that electricity did not arrive to their town until 1923. And so it was as if you were being raised by I skipped a generation. And they had a different take on life. They had a different view of the world. Theirs was a world in which collaboration was necessary for survival. You had to depend on your neighbors, especially in a small town in Cuba. And which was true in the U.S. in the 1800s, as a matter of fact. And theirs was, to an extent, a little bit of a pre-industrial revolution mindset, if I may say. And I think that fostered in me a sort of little different spin on things, a different interpretation of what I saw around me, thanks to their approach.
I think it's so important to look at a person's history when considering someone for public office. And one of the things that makes you, I think, so unique and attractive as a candidate is that you don't need to do this. You have succeeded in everything you've done. And right now you should be doing what most people of our age do, is to decide which beach to walk on in the morning. So hats off to you on doing what you're doing. What you went to public schools in New York?
Yeah, PS 28.
And then what happened? This obviously, you know, something happens between public school and what was it, college, where you realize you really could grab that American dream.
It was I started high school in the Bay Area, Alameda.
That's a long commute from the Bronx.
That's a long commute, man. It was like moving to Mayberry.
Did I miss something here? You were in the Bronx and then you went to school.
Yeah, my guardian's daughter got married and was having a child. So, you know, we all came to we went from the Bronx to to Alameda. I actually thought the sidewalks would be wood when just like on the show, but I was wrong. So, you know, I got to high school. I'd always done well in school, but I was a really skinny little kid even as I started high school. And I thought I was really going to be a pro baseball player, not going to work out. I couldn't throw the ball out of the infield on a high school field. But I took up distance running. I started running. And I got to tell you, running changed my life. Running convinced me that I could do things I never thought I could do.
Well, I started running very early in the beginning of the 70s. And there was one sneaker store in Manhattan where I lived, and I was thinking of running on the beach in Long Island during the summer. So I called the sneaker store and said, I'm thinking of running on the sand. What kind of sneakers do I get for running on the sand? And he said, socks, and hung up on me. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Founded by a UCSB grad, Deckers Brands has grown into a global driver of lifestyle footwear. From humble beginnings in 1973, Santa Barbara has been a key element of the business, defining the company's culture, providing home base for many employees, and inspiring product innovation each year. For a first-hand experience, stop by the Deckers Brands headquarters in Goleta, 250 Coromar Drive, from 10 to 7, Monday through Saturday, 11 to 5 Sunday, and shop their new brand showcase retail test lab. Guaranteed, you'll see a new side to Deckers' portfolio, from footwear to handbags to home furnishings.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here with Angel Martinez, a candidate for mayor and the former CEO and chairman of Deckers. We were just talking about the time between high school and UC Davis. So you went to UC, you stayed in California.
Stayed in California. With the exception of the years living in New England with Reebok for a while. So. But UC, I'm a Cal Aggie, you know, and that's where I met my wife, Frankie. And we've been married 38 years now, but we're both Aggies.
UC Davis, what did you major in?
I was a rhetoric major.
Rhetoric major?
Rhetoric major, yeah. There's, you know, rhetoric was one of the subjects taught in the medieval universities, along with grammar and mathematics and philosophy.
Well, I better be careful how I talk to you. And you were an All-American cross-country track. Was that in college, too?
Yeah, that was college, yeah. I was in cross-country, which was at the time 5 miles of hilly and muddy and all that, and then in track in the 5 and 10,000. But I finished fourth at the national championship in the 10,000 meter.
So was there a relationship between this passion for running and your desire to enter the sneaker business with Reebok?
Yeah, that was, that, you know, it's interesting because I was a very injury-prone runner. I was the kind of kid that I was always sort of struggling and recovering from an injury. It was messing up my performance. And I made the connection that must have something to do with these crappy shoes I'm running in, because back in those, I started running in 1969, so there weren't anything really called running shoes. And what we had were shoes that sort of people wore to run in, but they weren't exactly running shoes. And I started to make a connection between the lack of cushioning and the type of materials. I met a friend who had a place in Redwood City, and he was a sort of shoe cobbler for running shoes. So he would make anything you wanted. And I started dabbling in different constructions and different materials to make a better shoe, and that's kind of what got me going on running shoe technology.
There was a guy in New York, Gary Murky, who won the first New York Marathon, and mm-hmm. he used to sell sneakers out of his truck.
Yeah.
And the only place we could buy sneakers back in 1972 out of his truck on 90th Street.
Yes.
It's gotten a little bit bigger now.
It's a little bigger, yeah. I had my first running store, which was a store I co-owned with Runner's World Magazine. It was called Starting Line Sports, and we were really, I would say, one of the very first. We were certainly the first mail order business, but the store itself was a pro shop for runners, I guess you'd say. It was one of the first in the country.
Well, I've been running for 44 years. I run 6 miles a day, and I run with Hoka's. And I'm not just saying that because Hoka is a Deckers brand, but it really works. And, you know, concrete and knees don't usually permit you to run for 45 years, but, you know, good sneakers really make a difference. You then went to Deckers, and Deckers was then kind of a sleepy company that sold a couple of products, about $200 million in sales.
Yeah, a little over $200 million. And I went to Deckers after 21 years at Reebok.
That's not in Santa Barbara. We don't care.
We'll skip right through that.
Yeah, we have more important things to talk about.
But by the time I got to Deckers, I had actually cut my teeth in the athletic shoe business. And I'd also, after I left Reebok, we started another brand called Keen Footwear, which that's a big toe protection sandal. You've probably seen that. Interesting about Keen, until I saw that prototype product, it didn't occur to me that my toes were at mortal risk, you know, wearing flip-flops all those years, you know. So I kind of figured out, well, I bet you if I feel that about my toes, other people will too. So we decided to launch that brand. It was quite successful. And from there, I ended up at Deckers.
Do you consider yourself a marketing person or an engineering scientific person who develops this stuff, or both?
I'm a consumer person. You know, I'm a person who I've always been able to understand what people want and try to fill a need with the product, and that's really been my strength. So I did the aerobic shoes. Frankie was doing a lot of aerobics barefoot, and so we created the aerobic shoes, which really launched Reebok. And here in the case of Deckers, when I arrived, UGG and we had three brands: UGG, Teva, and Simple. UGG was doing about 125 million. Teva was doing about 90 million, and Simple was doing the rest. And I really thought that UGG was a huge brand. I thought UGG could be a half a billion or $1 billion brand. And the board wanted to get someday to, you know, $500 million, which is a lot. And I really took that challenge. I really thought it was an undeveloped brand, and now UGG is, about $1.5 billion brand or close to that.
And people wear it in the summer, which I still don't understand, but that shows you how good the marketing is.
Once you have some luxurious comfort on your feet, man, it's hard to take it off.
Yeah. One more thing on Deckers. One of the things that I think really differentiated the product was the Decker Showcase. When you walk in there, it could be a store on Madison Avenue, which there is one, by the way. And the styles are really very cutting edge, and it's no longer just, you know, I can buy my flip-flops here or even my Uggs here. It provides you with an opportunity to get the best styles. So hats off to you on that. So this makes sense. You had a position where you were the chairman of the board of a major company in town. You won awards for the best CEO in America. So I guess the next step would be to become mayor of Santa Barbara.
Well, I wasn't best CEO in America, but it was...
It was fourth, wasn't it?
Yeah, fourth, yeah.
Yes, so that's pretty good.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Yeah, yeah.
Logical, isn't it?
It's logical.
You know, look... I got to that point in my life where I wanted to do something different. I'd been in the shoe business for 40 years. And more importantly, you know, I found myself always having this sense of, I call it immigrant guilt, you know, meaning that if you've arrived in this country and the country's been good to you, you've managed to do well, you have a sense that why do I deserve what I've got? I still have family in Cuba who struggle. And so I've always had a sense of trying to give back. So for me, the most valuable thing I could give back isn't, you know, writing checks to charities or being on boards. I think that's important, but it's 40 years of experience. So I decided when I was approached about possibly running for mayor, after talking it over with my wife, to put that on the line, to put 40 years of inside experience, all of the various scenarios I've been through, in service to serving the future of this city. And that's what I'm doing, you know, and that to me is, it sounds a little cornball, you know, but it is a public service commitment. And I have a real need to try to make a difference.
And I hope you don't get pigeonholed, because when people sometimes mention your candidacy, they say, well, you know, I like him because he brings the business person's way of thinking into a town that needs it, which is true. But one of the reasons I spent so much time in the beginning of this show talking about character and talking about your life experience is that I think to be a shepherd of a community, particularly one like this, you really have to have compassion, empathy, emotional intelligence, things that typical corporate executive doesn't have. So just to say I'm a corporate executive isn't enough. You need to have someone with a passion for doing the right thing, which is why your history is so important. And speaking of doing the right thing, what are the key issues that are facing Santa Barbara today?
Well, I always refer to it as a giant iceberg. You know, there are the issues that are below the waterline, which are often complicated, difficult to communicate, hard to understand. And then there are the issues above the waterline, which are obvious, you know, and they appear smaller. And so I would say that the above the waterline issues in Santa Barbara have to do with the transient homeless problem, which is actually the wrong way to think about it, because it's not one big bucket into which you put all the homeless. There are categories of people who find themselves in this condition for a variety of reasons. Then there are the 50 empty storefronts on State Street, which is indicative of a whole lot of a lack of planning and strategy, et cetera, and a lack of collaboration. And then there is this persistent housing problem we have with especially workforce housing. You know, I have people at Deckers who make $90,000 a year and cannot afford their own apartment, which is a little shocking in a place like this. And it's become a very significant inhibitor to economic growth in this town.
So what do you do about I'm here and you're not kind of a thinking? The people who vote in the election actually are living here. Sure, some of them are probably struggling, but a lot of people here have their house. That, you know, they may have, you know, bought it cheaper, or they may have a lot of money, whatever. How do you get people to coalesce around the idea that things like workforce housing is important?
Well, there is one important thing to understand about any community. And I think this is very difficult to disprove, because every indicator says otherwise. No growth equals slow death. And that in itself is something that people have to pay very close attention to. If we resist bringing new energized businesses, creating opportunities for jobs for the next generation of Santa Barbarans, creating no opportunity or not having any opportunity for them to afford a house or start a business, then our future is in trouble and we're not going to be able to pay our bills. It's really going to be an ugly scenario going forward. So people do have to understand that while we celebrate everything that got us here, it's not enough to get us where we need to go.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station, and we'll be right back.
Founded by a UCSB grad, Deckers Brands has grown into a global driver of lifestyle footwear. From humble beginnings in 1973, Santa Barbara has been a key element of the business, defining the company's culture, providing home base for many employees, and inspiring product innovation each year. For a first-hand experience, stop by the Deckers Brands headquarters in Goleta, 250 Coromar Drive, from 10 to 7, Monday through Saturday, 11-5 Sunday, and shop their new brand showcase retail test lab. Guaranteed, you'll see a new side to Deckers' portfolio, from footwear to handbags to home furnishings.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers, in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Huh?
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, Improving Attitude, Creating Social Harmony, Bridging the Achievement Gap for Teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here with Angel Martinez talking about what we can do to make this even a better place. And you were talking about the notion that without growth, a city will die. And that's not something that's easy to convince a lot of people of.
Well, when you say growth, you know, people, especially in this town, they ascribe so many negative connotations to growth. And there's always a sense that growth means a degradation of our quality of life, or growth means a degradation of our environment, or growth in some way challenges what we love about Santa Barbara. And I think those things can be easily disproven by just looking around the world and identifying places that have seen growth, and they've attracted business and provided an energized next generation of citizens without compromising what everyone loves about that place. And I referenced Boulder, Colorado as a local, more local place. Austin, Texas is that kind of place. San Antonio is a great town. There are a variety of cities around there. I used to live in Concord, Massachusetts, which is one of the oldest, founded in 1637, has retained everything everyone loves about Concord, but is a very dynamic environment.
Yeah, they didn't change the weather, though.
They didn't change the weather, no. So that's one thing that that we do have that is so appealing. So in the end, this is a town that will always be a desirable place. This is a town that will always have expensive real estate. This is a town, I like to think of it as a virtual island. You know, we can't go up, we can't go out in any direction. And therefore, every square inch of land in this town has to be treated in a precious manner. And that means we've got to be careful. It means we've got to be careful about how we look at things. We've got to be more creative than other people are. You know, what's creative about scraping off some dirt and putting up a bunch of houses? Nothing. But what's creative is maximizing the space we have with creative uses of the land and creative approaches to the housing issue, repurposing buildings, understanding what the consumer wants. On downtown, for example, you know, the movement right now, it's actually gaining huge momentum, not here, but everywhere. Demand for downtown living, walkable environments. And we have the perfect place for that. I live downtown. I live two blocks off State. And I love walking around on State Street. I love walking to movies, to restaurants, to shops, et cetera. More and more people want that same thing. We have an opportunity to create in the downtown corridor housing that is not car dependent, because the folks who want to live there, they're not car dependent. You can walk. You can, you know, take Uber. You can take Lyft. You can ride your bike. I rode it over here. I ride my Vespa. You know, if I have to walk more than 15 blocks, I'll take my Vespa. Sometimes,
but you know what's so interesting? In this town, there is very stringent rules on how many parking spaces you need to put into a new construction.
Yeah,
and you know that sort of incentivizes people to have a car. And you know the pushback is if you don't have enough parking spaces, there's going to be parking on the street. No one takes the time to say maybe they just won't have a car.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's as if we try to solve every project has to be the all in. Solution to every problem. Rather than saying, let's take a holistic approach to the entire city or a certain section of the city, and in this part, this is for people who don't want to drive a car and they can rent these kind of apartments, and this is for people who really want a car, they're going to need a two-car garage, and this is that section, or this is that part of this region, because, for example, we have Goleta with available housing, there's Carpinteria with available housing, Lompoc, Buellton, and if you want land and a lot of space, Buellton's a great choice, you know. So this, we live on an island. That's what we have to understand. This is, and we got to start thinking with an island mentality, because otherwise we're going to overrun ourselves. You know, we're going to have far too many cars, far too much traffic, and far too many, you know, ill-considered developments.
When I first moved here, I heard from many old-time residents that you don't really understand Santa Barbara until you're here a while, because we're unique. We're a very different place. And to some extent, we have things that, to a large extent, we have things that are quite different. But you mentioned Boulder. You know, there are many cities where they've done innovative things and we don't have to reinvent the wheel. And right. We actually aren't that unique, that the problems...
No, we're actually not. We're not unique. And, you know, these are consistent problems across the country. it's important to understand how other communities have solved these problems or address these problems and learn from those solutions and incorporate those solutions. This is a bubble that we live in here, and it's to our detriment at this point. We do need to have fresh approaches and fresh thinking, and we do need a new vision for the future in order to not be ad hoc about our future. You know, we don't want to have a future that sort of goes from crisis management to crisis management. And, you know, this is our moment in time to do that. It's been almost 100 years since we had a coherent vision for this city, and that was with Pearl Chase. And that's worked magnificently. But now we're in need of a refresh and a whole new vision for the next 100 years. And we have a moment in time to address that and really get to work on that collectively. This is not any one person's idea. This is about a collaboration of all the stakeholders in this city who love the city so much.
And when you look at I've only been here almost 20 years, but when I look at some of the discussions over the years about what we should be looking for in the future, the talk is very bottom-up. It's very detailed. You know, what should be the right R3? Or what should be the right zoning? And how many parking spaces? It's not top-down. It's not envisioning the community like Del Webb did. Now, I'm not saying he did a great job in the 1950s, but he looked at the world in the 50s and said, what are people going to want? And we need to, as you say, you know, look around the world to see what other cities have had the same benefit of having, you know, unique climate and nice people, but have restricted land. And what can we do from a top-down basis to make this city really continue on as a great city? So you mentioned the transient problem, the homeless problem. What can we do about that?
Well, you know, it's a complicated problem. There's no panacea. So anyone to say that, well, you know, I have the solution. There is no single solution. I think it has to start with understanding what are we talking about in terms of the homeless population. And in my opinion, we have fixed amount of resources here to address the problem. And I believe that those resources should be focused on the local homeless community, people who are from this town, who find themselves either destitute from an economic or health crisis, and thereby the grace of God go any of us, or they find themselves homeless either through mental illness or alcohol or drug dependency. The interesting thing is those folks, you know, they tend to be a local population. Many of them went to Santa Barbara High. I think that the first dollar we spend on homeless services should be focused on those people. The other group of people, that is a significant number and creates a lot of the problem. If you talk to police, the fire department, if you talk to the hospital, they'll tell you that we do have a problem with transient homeless people. People who've made a lifestyle choice. Now, I know a lot of people are kind of saying, well, how dare you say it's a lifestyle? Actually, there is a lifestyle choice out there. There's a website you can go to identify where the great panhandling is, how much money you can make. A lot of these folks have money. They have resources. They choose to panhandle. We need to disincentivize them by not giving them cash. They don't want services. They don't want a meal. They don't want, you know, housing. Most of those folks want cash. That's taking resources away from our local homeless population. And I want to create a program which creates what I call rescue dollars, which, you know, is an alternative to cash that you can give them to help out. Every dollar we raise in rescue dollars goes to our local resources. I think what will happen after a month or two, those people who want cash and aren't getting it anymore will go to another place. They'll go somewhere else where there is cash. Then we can start getting a handle on what is our total localized homeless population and make sure we put all the resources necessary to help those people out.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Available only at the company's headquarters in Goleta, the new Deckers brand showcase features the latest footwear from UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ahnu brands. You're invited to stop by to experience firsthand what makes Deckers brand so unique. Discover new product and try on a range of offerings from your favorite Deckers brand at their retail stores. Now open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday and from 11 to 5 on Sunday at 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, helping teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. I'm Neil Kreisel, and I'm here with Angel Martinez, a candidate for mayor. And we're talking about the transient homeless problem, which directly leads into the problem some of these stores are having on State Street. It's very difficult to spend a lot of money on rent and have someone sleeping drunk in your doorway, I guess.
Well, you know, the State Street problem is also complicated. I'm not going to say that that the homeless are the cause of the problem on State Street. They're a contributor to the problem. But in fact, what State Street is a very, very poorly conceived, poorly performing, unmanaged mall, a mall that is longer than Michigan Avenue in Chicago. So no one would ever in their right mind build a mall that long. So we really need to re-envision State Street. We need to have experience-based retailing, which is happening all over the country. We need to have localized boutiques. If you want to build a mall that competes with Amazon.com, so where lowest price and best assortment are click away, you know, overnight shipping for free, good luck with that. That's never going to wash. You need to create environments that are family-friendly, that people can come and find products that are more localized or curated, if you will, that you're not going to easily find on Amazon. You need to include residential. There needs to be a lot more residential on State Street so that it has the energy of people who live there. And they tend to police the area as well. State Street right now was a place that we built for tourists. Well, the problem with that is, and this has been shown over and over again, if you build a commercial zone to attract tourists, the locals will not come. If you build a commercial zone to attract locals, the tourists will come. And so we've got it upside down. And we really need to rethink what we're doing. I would envision State Street as a place where I can bring my family, my kids. Well, now they're older, but I mean, someday I'll have grandkids. Where restaurants and you know, come out farther onto the sidewalk. Perhaps we have State Street closed for a few blocks. We can maybe try on weekends to experiment with that. We already do it for farmers markets. Most folks don't use State Street as a way of getting anywhere. You drive down State Street to be seen in your convertible. I mean, that's kind of why you drive down there. So there are many things we can do to re-envision it. It needs collaboration by the business owners, the property owners, and the city. And that, yes, I think we need to start enforcing some vagrancy laws and dissuading people, not giving them cash, you know, giving them these alternatives, from really accosting. This happens a lot. Accosting. I mean, it happens a lot. And if I'll just read the Yelp reviews, the people who come off the ships after an experience in Santa Barbara, and see what they're saying. You know, this is not a pleasant experience at many times.
You talk about the stakeholders all cooperating, but I haven't seen that much of it in the years I've been here. There seems to be an adversarial relationship between the home, property owners and the city, it's almost as if in some cases the owners are still plowing ahead with the old plan, just trying to get as far as they can go. There was a news report 2 days ago on Channel 3 about a landlord purchasing one of the buildings downtown and just simply raising rents across the board on every single tenant. That's not redevelopment. It may work, it may not work, but there really needs to be a way of convincing all the stakeholders to cooperate.
That's where a vision comes in. You know, people I found that people, when presented with a viable a vision for the future that they can have this, hold a stake in, that they can see as an opportunity for themselves and the people they care about, that most people participate and they jump in. I mean, that's how you build companies. That's how you build teams, baseball, football, basketball teams. You have to have a vision for what kind of team you want to have. And I think what we've lacked is vision for the future, and I think we've lacked the leadership to deliver it. And I'd say that the most exciting thing about running for mayor has been all the people I've met in this process who love the city so much, who want to contribute toward a better future for the city, and feel frustrated because they're on the sidelines. You know, they want to get in, but they're pushed out. And, you know, if we're going to solve our problems, that can't be our approach.
And you mentioned that in order for this to happen, you need to get everyone to buy into it. And so the day you're inaugurated mayor, you've got to get all these disparate people in the room together and begin to make a plan that everyone can buy into, which is a challenge unto itself. One of it is envisioning the future. The other is actually effectuating it.
Well, there's always going to be, no matter what plan you come up with, the fringe on both sides who are just don't want it. You know, they don't want any change because they think we're perfectly fine the way we are. I think then there is a broad middle of people who are enlightened who say, you know what, change is somewhat inevitable. The alternative to change is death. So we really do need to start putting our hands around what this looks like in 10 or 15 or 20 years. And I think if most people in this town close their eyes and could somehow record what's in their head in envisioning a Santa Barbara 20 years from now, there'd be tremendous consistency across the board. No one's envisioning sky rises, high rises on State Street. No one's envisioning polluting the water. No one's envisioning building houses up the hills. You know, that's not in anyone's mind, in my expectation. But what we do have is an opportunity to be the best small city in America. And we do have an opportunity to leverage the talent that comes out of UCSB. And we do have an opportunity to really manage this environment in a way that is a model for the rest of the country. So those are opportunities for us that are also opportunities for economic growth.
Which leads us into education. And by the way, one of our sponsors is CSU Channel Islands. And I don't want UCSB to get a plug without plugging CSU Channel Islands, because one of the things that USC Channel Islands has is a focus on education. And yes, UCSB is a great school, but a lot of its resources are for research. And all of the resources of Channel Islands is for education and teaching. And it is the closest state, Cal State, university to Santa Barbara, and does in fact service so many kids here.
But and it's a great, great opportunity for kids here. Yeah. Fantastic.
And it's a quarter of the price of UCSB.
Yeah, no, it's boy, if I were a kid, that, you know, I would be all over that school.
Yeah. So the name of the show is Aha Presents About Education. One of the things that makes for a community is not just the retail, not just the homeless, but how well you can educate your kids. Is there anything that you would be looking at to help promote our education?
Absolutely. You know, I think education is about commitment, and it's about a commitment to not only the quality of education, but the future of the kids. And I'm very disappointed with the trend that we're seeing in education, the constant cutbacks in funding for education with the priority being something else. You know, well, what's more important than the education of our kids for any sort of viable future for our country, not to mention our city? In my mind, the reason I'm sitting here is because of public schools in New York and California, including University of California. And when we create barriers to that type of quality education, I think we only hurt ourselves in the future. I think we end up creating paths to nothing, paths that are dead ends, because at some point we're going to have to start importing talent from other places, because we may not have the talent to keep up with what's happening around the world in the global economy. And to me, that's a tragedy, and it's totally unnecessary.
We've had on over the years on this show both the superintendents of of schools for the Unified School District, and both of them said that one of their priorities is making sure that there's equity in the classroom. And we have a very large Hispanic population here. And even though this is a very progressive liberal community, there is still a tension between different economic, socio and economic groups. And one of the things that's so important about education is to provide a place of safety, a place where people can grow as human beings. And that is as important as, you know, making sure State Street is...
Absolutely.
And so, you know, we need to find a way of making sure that all the participants in our school system get the same...
But if I may say, you know, the in my opinion, equity in the classroom, and try to unpack what that means that all kids perform to a high expectation. What I never wanted as a kid, and English is my second language, you know, so I never wanted as a kid to be held to a lower standard than everyone else. I wanted to step up to see if I was as good as other people, if I could perform to the same standard. I didn't want standards lowered. Equity in the classroom does not mean dumbing down, if you will, the standards that we have for education. It means preparing kids to step up and meet the challenges of the next generation of business people, of government servants, you know, of business owners, of teachers, of scientists. And the world is not waiting for us to get our act together. The world is just going forward at full speed. So we've really got to get smart about a high standard of performance, holding kids accountable and holding their parents accountable to the urgency of this being a requirement for them successful in the future.
Well put. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
For more than 20 years now, the unique landscape and people of the Santa Barbara community have helped grow Deckers Brands into the lifestyle footwear leaders they are today. Newly opened at their headquarters in Goleta, the Deckers Brand Showcase allows you to explore and shop the UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ahnu brands while you're likely to discover something new or potentially receive an in-store special offer. At 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta, the showcase is open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 Monday through Saturday and 11 to 5 on Sunday.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here with Angel Martinez. And we're actually solving all the city problems. I don't think we really need to have an election. But there's one problem I don't want to let the show end without talking about, and that's water. Mm. It rained, which is good.
That was awesome.
That was awesome, but I'm not sure that's enough.
No.
So what's the plan?
Well, you know, it starts with an attitude about water. It starts with an understanding that water is as valuable as oil. And in a place like this, I think that's very true. It might even be more valuable. And here, this is a place that is naturally water-starved. Well, we live in a semi-arid environment. Most of the plants around here are imported. I think, what are the native trees? The oak trees and the sycamores are the only native trees to this area. Everything else was brought in here. And we have a beautiful garden here during a time when there was ample supply of water. We may be going into a situation over who knows how many years where water is going to be a hugely valuable commodity. We need to start thinking more carefully about water, start using water differently. I just put in artificial turf in my backyard, which my dogs love it. And it doesn't look any different to me. And I'm not a person who rolls around in the wet grass anyway.
You're from the Bronx. What would you know?
Yeah, that's true. I had concrete in the Bronx, so this is an upgrade, right? But, you know, we have a desal plant that is now back online, which is a good thing. We need to improve that technology. We need to start looking at a variety of other uses or ways of extracting. You know, there's a local company who's developed a water cooler. This is fantastic. You can see it down at the impact hub. And this extracts perfectly pure drinking water out of the air. It makes 5 gallons a day, extracting water vapor out of the air. And it works. It's an amazing thing. Those are the kinds of things that, those are the technologies that we need to start looking at going forward. And I'm a car guy. You know, I kind of like my old cars. I don't wash them with a hose. I got a spray bottle and some stuff that is organic. And, you know, I just do that. So it for me is a really crucial thing that we've got to have an attitude shift about is the use of water.
And one of the things that I think should unite us all, without water, a really important part of the city's beauty is going to be lost.
That's
and
right.
A lot of things that make this city attractive is going to be lost. You mentioned earlier that you're an immigrant from Cuba, so I have to ask you, why, when you have successful Cubans living in this country, why do they insist upon keeping the door closed? Is this the same issue we have with the administration today about not wanting anyone to come into this country? What is the mentality of someone saying, I don't want them here?
Yeah, it's always been a mystery to me. There's a mentality which is part mythical. Okay, you know, a lot of the folks you meet down in Miami, the older generation of people, for an island its size, it's shocking how many giant plantation owners moved to Miami. By that, I mean, there's a myth that people have used over the years to say, well, when I was in Cuba, I used to own this and I used to own that and I had a big mansion and I had, you know, 300 acres and I grew tobacco. When actually, no, you drove a bus. You drove a bus in Havana. But it's now, you know, you've kind of remade yourself and you're a person who, when you were in Cuba, you had this and you had that. It's frankly a bunch of BS. And it's perpetuating this idea that, you know, Cuba before the revolution was a paradise. Well, you know what? It really wasn't. That's why there was a revolution. The majority of people in Cuba, there was no middle class in Cuba. There was a corruption at the top, and then there was everybody else. So in the end, the middle class in Cuba is part mythical. Everyone was struggling to an extent. And this has perpetuated this sort of whole idea in Florida that you want to go back and reclaim what was yours. Well, I've been there. I've seen what's left of it. You don't want it anyway because you couldn't afford to fix it. So it's about time we move on. You want to get rid of the regime in Cuba? Open it up. Let Cubans see what they're missing. And when I was down there, I was down there in 94, Castro used the embargo as a scapegoat for every single failure of his regime. And they continue to do that. So you want to get rid of those guys? Open it up. That's the best solution for changing the future and really including Cuba in the Western Hemisphere.
And I mentioned Cuba not only because you are an expert on the subject, but because this whole debate about immigration is attacking the whole idea of what America is about and about empathy for other people and about building a society that is going to be able to grow. I mean, we have population growth that's declining. We're losing great brain power to other countries. So, you know, you've got this very protectionism view of the world, which is not only mean-spirited, but economically stupid.
Well, we saw Hurricane Irma didn't care about borders.
Well, luckily we don't have climate change, but but we're going to have Angel back, and he's going to give us a solution for climate change as well. Angel Martinez, thank you for being here. Thank you for all you've done for the business community, and thank you for what you will do as mayor. You've been listening to AHA Presents About Education. We'll be back here next week.